The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 485, the 19th of May, 2016. On today's podcast, I have Chief Executive Officer of Challenger Acquisitions, that's CHAL, Mark Starson, talks about the company's progress in the world of giant observation wheels. Very interesting too. Also on the podcast, Chairman and CEO of Thor Mining, THR, Mick Billing, discusses the operations and recent fundraising. I also have CEO of Independent Resources, IRG, Greg Coleman, outlines the progress they are making with their assets in the Middle East. And last but not least, Flow Group CEO Tony Stiff, CFO Nigel Canham, as Flow, F-L-O-W, cover the recent results and answer private investor questions. Do me a favour, by all means, download the Vox Markets app. It's free of charge. Just go to voxmarkets.co.uk/app. And then I ask every one of the people on the podcast today, at the end of the interview, give us three reasons why we should add you to our watch list. And what I mean by this is all you need to do is go to their page on Vox Markets and click follow if you like what you hear. Then you get RNS announcements straight to the front screen of your phone. It's free, it's an invaluable resource, and it brings you closer to the company, and you'll never miss any important release they ever send out. Unless, obviously, your battery's flat on your phone.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
Joining me on the podcast right now is Chief Executive Officer of Challenge Acquisitions at CHAL. Ticker, it's Mark Gustafson. Thanks for coming back on, Mark.
Thanks a bunch, Justin. Appreciate it.
Now, I was thinking about your business, and it's quite unique. I don't know, are there any other listed companies that are doing what you do?
To our knowledge, no. We're the only listed a company that does giant observation wheels in our sector.
Yeah, that's amazing. So in fact, people are always tuning in. There's people may have not have heard of you before. So explain exactly what you do with giant observation wheels.
You bet. If you think of, or if any of your listeners think of the London Eye, that's exactly what we do. We own the engineering company that started that whole project in terms of the project management for the design of the wheel and the drive and control system. So that engineering group is part of Challenger now. That's called Starneth, based out of the Netherlands. And what we're working on is a pipeline of 25 opportunities to build some other additional wheels like the London Eye. Justin, there's only four of them operating in the world right now, and two are under construction, and we hope to see a lot more in the future.
Yeah, and they are, phenomenally popular. It's like, it's almost like when you look back at it now with hindsight, it's a no-brainer. You think, well, you've got millions of people coming to these capital cities, and they want to do touristy things, and what better than to get on a little ride that takes you over the capital so you can see the entire capital. It's a no-brainer. It's the people queuing there from early morning to late at night, and I suppose, once one city did it, like London, every city is probably doing the same now, and so your guy Starneth there, I suppose they are the pioneers of this, are they?
Well, they are. It was with a previous company, but the CEO of Starneth, he was the project manager for the original project for the London Eye, so he's the only one in the world that can lay claim to that.
Yeah, and your revenue streams you hope to be deriving come in sort of two forms, I suppose, don't they? So initially you get the contracts for the design and the project management, and then you also like to take an equity stake in the actual wheel itself, is that right?
You're right, Justin. Short term and near term, it's going to be significant revenues and cash flows from these 100 million pound plus contracts to project manage each giant observation wheel. So those typically take 2 to 3 years to build. So that revenue and cash flow will be spread over the 2 to 3 years. But each project will really transform Challenger as we announce them. So the project management of these is really quite significant. And then, as you indicated, the second source is more longer term. But as we take equity stakes in these wheels, we'll start to generate dividends and profit sharing from these wheels once they become operational.
Yeah, and so the next one you're involved with, is that New York at the moment?
Yeah, New York is under construction as we speak. It's about two-thirds of the way through its process there. Probably about 230, 240 million U.S. has been spent on the whole entertainment complex. It looks like sometime mid to late 2017, it looks to be complete. And we own a strategic 3% stake in that. And our Starnet guys, of course, were the lead design and engineers for the wheel for that project.
Yeah, and I was just reading some stats on the New York. It's bigger than the. That's a bit annoying. That's the an American, typical Americans. I don't know where you're from, Mark. Where are you from?
I'm from Canada, Justin.
Oh, you're lucky. Yeah, you're lucky. Yeah.
And but, you're right. It is 50% bigger than the London Eye, but we're also pretty sure the Dubai Eye is going to be the biggest in the world for reasons as you're well aware of.
Yeah, well, I was just looking at the stats. So that they're hopefully, in one of your releases, they're saying 30,000 paying customers a day on the New York, wheel there. That's phenomenal, because even if you look at, like, say $30 a head, that's close to $1 million pretty much, you know? And so you can see the kind of revenue these generate, can't you?
Well, it's interesting because the London Eye, you know, there's about 3 to 4 million customers that take that each year, and it's about 50 to 60% utilized. On the New York wheel, once it becomes operational, they're expecting similar numbers with about a 30 or 35% utilization. So we think that it's going to be really, really a successful project, just like the London Eye, and perhaps they may have more traffic. So we're looking forward to that.
Yeah. So one thing I was thinking, I mean, you told me this last time, so it dispelled my worries about this, is how limited these are. I mean, I was thinking, well, how many people are going to do this? You know, two or three? But you say you've got a pipeline of how many?
There's 25, Justin, and the issue there is that you're right. Every major city in the world comes to London, and they'd love to have a London Eye in their city. You know, the problem is it takes several years for these projects to get positioned where they're at a point where they can be built. So a lot of things have to come together at the right time for these things to occur. And we've got a pipeline of 25 active projects right now. And not all of them will be built, but we believe they're pretty active, and a lot of the discussions are in those advanced stages. So we're pretty optimistic to deliver at least one of those projects each year in Challenger.
Okay, all right. And I've seen you've, you know, quite successful here at building businesses. What's your ambition here with, Challenger Acquisitions?
Yeah, Justin, it always takes longer than you'd like, and the first year or two is that startup phase, but over a 5 or 6 year period, you can build a billion pound or billion dollar market cap company. You do need some things to go right for you, but just with a couple of projects alone here, we see us starting to enter in that territory or get on the curve towards that billion pound market cap company, and that's what we'd like. We'd really like to have a track record of delivering at least one of these project management contracts each year, and then starting to build up our equity stake in several wheels globally.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, Mark. You know, if anyone needs any convincing, to put you on their Vox Markets watch list, can you give us three reasons as a sort of summary, please?
Sure. We've got obviously the go-to guy. Guys in the world with our Starnet team in the Netherlands, they have the expertise to project manage these. Secondly, we have that pipeline of 25 projects that are underway, and they're very, very active, and several of them are at that point where we do hope to announce things later this year. And the third thing is, I think people need to just take a look at the company and see what we're doing. I've had a nice chance to pick up a few more shares here, so I think, you know, everything does take a little bit more time you'd like, but we obviously, like everybody else, see good value in our shares, but people should just put it on their radar screen and watch the company.
Yeah, well, I see you've purchased more shares there, and what are you, up over 5% now of the company, are you?
Yes, sir, and I think the executives, or certainly the CEO, should have at least that type of stake in a company.
Yeah, it's one of the classic metrics, I think, when anyone's investing in a company, you know, especially the smaller companies, see that the management have skin in the game, because then, you know, you get the feeling they really believe in it, you know, and I always like that. Anyway, Mark, thank you for coming on, and listen, like you said, you've got a news flow coming out, so please come back on again soon.
Thanks a bunch, sir. Appreciate it.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
Joining me on the podcast right now is Chairman and CEO of Thor Mining. That's THR ticker. It's Mick Billin. Thanks for coming on, Mick.
Well, hi, Justin. Nice to talk to you.
I love the power of technology, because you are now, where are you? In Adelaide, is that right?
That's correct, Adelaide, South Australia. We're heading into winter, whereas you guys, I guess, have got the start of summer coming on.
Yeah, I bet the weather over there is still better. It's like we've had terrible weather the last couple of days. Rain and everything. I mean, we see a bit of sun today, but it's not reliable. But thanks for coming on, Mick. So tell us a bit about Thor, because I know some people probably wouldn't have heard of Thor until recently, and we'll go through that. But tell us a bit about Thor and what you're up to then, Mick.
Yeah, sure, Justin. Thor is a tungsten company. And we are listed on both the AIM exchange in the UK and ASX here in Australia. We were brought into being some time ago with the specific purpose of acquiring and turning from an early exploration project, the Molly Hill Tungsten Project in the Northern Territory of Australia. We've been successful in, to a large extent, in doing that. It's gone from an exploration project to one where we have a resource, we have a reserve, we have environmental approvals and all the metallurgical test work done and a feasibility study done that says this project is ready for finance with a bit of an uptick in pricing required to tip that over the scales. So that's our number one project and what we were brought into being for. Since then, we've done a couple of other things. We've more recently, a couple of years ago, acquired another tungsten project in Nevada in the USA. It's got a slightly larger resource than the one at Molly Hill, but is not nearly as advanced. We believe the US project we call Pilot Mountain is going to be quite a large resource in the end that needs a reasonable amount of exploration work, a bunch of metallurgical test work, and all the usual sets of studies required for feasibility. It's probably at best 5 years from production.
Okay, and on your website, that's called Pilot Mountain, isn't it, in Nevada?
That's correct, yeah.
And so you've got Molly Hill in Australia there, and you've also got some gold projects, haven't you?
We've recently sold the Spring Hill Gold Project in the Northern Territory, received some cash for that, which went off to pay some debt that was secured against that, and there's another tranche of cash due from that sale in about 9 months' time. We also have a gold project in southern Western Australia called Dundas, very early stage project. We have quite high hopes for it, but it is early stage and needs a lot of work.
Do you know what I'm astounded by, Mick? You've got a lot going on there, and you mentioned there. And let's, before I say anything, let's go on to you've recently done a placing. And I think people, you came onto people's radar here because Metal Tiger were involved in the placing. They took, was it a third or quarter of the tranche there? And so you got cash coming in with that. You're selling, like you said, your Spring Hill operation. And your market cap is only 1.5 million, it's showing right now. So, you know, when the new placing shares come in, I'm assuming we did a quick chat and you said around about 2 mil, but half of that will be in cash, won't it?
It will be. Unfortunately, cash has a habit of not hanging around forever, Justin. People, you know, you have to pay rent and listing fees and things of that nature, but we all try and be fairly frugal with it. But there are some things we want to do with that. There's always some drilling we would like to do on our tungsten projects, on our gold projects. So it won't hang around forever, but there's a fair chance we won't need to go back to the market for a little while.
Yeah, but do you know what? One of the last people I quite a few months back, I said this to. I said, you're looking very busy for a company sub 3 million market cap. And that was to Paul Johnson, a Metal Tiger, oddly enough. And I took shares in the company there. I bought shares in the company, I mean. And for a while, he kept coming on the podcast. I said, you're very busy, but the market, the share price isn't moving. And all of a sudden, boom, through the roof there. So, I mean, do you think, I mean, obviously, most CEOs will come on the podcast and say they're undervalued, but I can see sometimes that, you know, companies are undervalued. Do you feel at the moment you are undervalued?
I think like every other CEO of every other junior resource company, of course we're undervalued, Justin. I think it's fair to say that Resource companies have had a fair belting in the last few years. Raising funds has been difficult, and like others, we've not managed to raise sufficient funds to do everything we'd like to do. And while we are busy, we've not been able to do as much as we can. Hopefully, with this recent placing and the money due shortly, we can up the ante a little.
Let's go back to it. What's the immediate priority for you guys now?
There's a couple of magnetic anomalies that look exactly like our Molly Hill magnetic anomaly on our tenement, only a few kilometres away, about 4 or 5 kilometres away from our Molly Hill project. We'd like to run a drilling rig over those relatively quickly, and the first pass testing of that will be quite modest in cost. If we get some success, well, we'll have to go back and do some more, and the cost of that will be what it will be. So that's first priority, and we'd also like to do something similar at our Dundas Gold project. We think there's an opportunity to do that in the coming months. Pilot Mountain, love to do some more work. We will probably need to see the next tranche of funding from the sale of Spring Hill come through before we're in a position to do that.
I mean, you know, what's your take on the commodity sector? I know, like I said, we've been hammered now for pretty much 5 years. People are suggesting there's a bottom here. What's your thoughts on that?
Look, depending on the commodity, I think iron ore and coal are probably in for some hard times for a little bit longer. Gold is still quite strong and remains strong. Base metals, copper, silver, perhaps copper, zinc, lead. I would hope, and nickel, I would hope would come good in the not too distant future. We're in tungsten, essentially, and tungsten hasn't had a good time in the last little while, but since the middle of January, the price of tungsten has rebounded somewhat, and it's probably about somewhere between 25 and 30% higher than it was in the middle of January, albeit from a dreadfully low base. So there are green shoots there for the commodity that we are focused upon. I tend to think that the longer things stay down, the more likelihood that they will recover quite soon. But everybody says that. But I tend to think that the worst is over. There also appears to be some renewed interest in the resource companies, and perhaps that is a result of a general feeling that commodity prices are starting to sneak back up again.
Yeah. So when do you hope to be, you know, into production?
Molly Hill construction period from the time we get finance is about 12 months. So if we had finance tomorrow by May, June of 2017, the first concentrate should be rolling out of the gate. Well, we don't have, we're not going to get finance tomorrow, but if the price of tungsten continues to sneak up as it has, I'd be hopeful that that could happen in the next few months, but it will require a continued improvement in price from where we are now.
Okay, marvellous. Well, Mick, you know, if you need to convince people anymore, please, could you give us three reasons why someone should put Thor Mining on their Vox Markets watch list?
Yeah, sure, Justin. I think in the first instance, we're in a commodity which is tungsten, which, as I said, is increasing in price and value, and there's a general belief that that price will continue to go up for a little while. The second thing is that we are not a grassroots explorer. We have a project. It has a feasibility study. It can come into production with finance relatively quickly. And I guess last but not least is that given cash position from the recent placing and what's coming in from the second tranche of sale of Spring Hill, we would hope that we don't have to dilute investors any further with another capital raise for a little while.
Marvellous. Mick, lovely to chat to you. Thank you for taking the time out. And please do come back on when you have some more news.
Justin, thanks very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Greg Coleman, CEO of Independent Resources. It's IRG ticker. Greg, thanks for coming back on.
Yeah, thank you, Justin. Good afternoon.
Now, you've been on the podcast several times, but we're always getting new listeners and there's people tuning in who may have missed your last appearance on the podcast. So for those guys and those girls, can you tell us exactly what Independent Resources is all about, please, Greg?
We're all about acquiring and developing assets in North Africa, particularly in Egypt and Tunisia. And we have a very strong management team, very committed to the success of this company. And we think we have the beginnings of a good asset base, low cost, with lots of upside.
Okay, and tell us about the assets you have at the moment.
So we have two assets. We have a producing asset in Egypt called East Ghazalat, which we acquired last fall. Mm-hmm. And we have an exploration asset in Tunisia called Zarhadada, which we're the operator of and have 100% working interest in.
Okay. And what has changed since we last spoke? Has any news happened? Anything positive developed?
There's been a few developments, I think all noteworthy. The first is that in Tunisia, our Zarhadada permit has now been formally approved for an extension for an additional year to August of 2017. Mm-hmm. And because of that, we've had some renewed investor interest in farming into the permit because now people see that they have time to complete or get well into the work program before next August. Mm-hmm. Secondly, we are progressing our registration in Egypt. As everyone, I imagine, knows, security is a big issue in Egypt, and the registration process has taken a bit longer than we would have liked because of that. But we're now well into the final stages of that, and we expect to be receiving monies from our EGPC revenues that's accruing there starting in the next several weeks. So this process is well in hand now.
Go on.
And then thirdly, as everyone will have seen, we have been converting some of our outstanding creditors into equity with some limited cash payments, which is cleaning up our balance sheet and I think putting us in a great position for the next few months to be able to demonstrate significant share price growth, especially from where we are today.
Yeah, and you mentioned that I think as far as you're concerned, management, you are taking your pay in equity. Is that the case?
All of the directors and senior management have been taking and will continue to take their pay in equity at a significant premium to the current share price. As you saw in our announcement of the 10th of May, we're converting people at between 0.1p and in some cases up to 0.25p per share, which I think demonstrates a significant interest in the staying with the company and working with us in the future.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because at the moment, you're at, 0.0575. Yeah,
so yes, exactly.
Significant premium. Okay, so revenue-wise, how's that looking and how much are you expecting to receive and when are you expecting to receive that?
Well, we've accrued revenue in EGPC probably as of now, it's something like $750,000. And because of oil prices increasing to now nearly $50, that will increase to something like our share being around $100,000 a month. And that bodes well for the asset in Egypt. And I think it gives people encouragement that there's lots of upside for our assets in the next year as people get more confident oil prices are going to stabilize and around the current levels.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing how that's changed, isn't it? We've gone from being a glut and all of a sudden now there's some supply issues around the world in Canada, I think Nigeria, and now people are saying, hang on, supply is starting to come off a bit.
Yeah, I think the market is starting to recognize that the supply situation is quite precarious. Everybody has been producing flat out, whether it's in Canada or Saudi Arabia or Nigeria, and there's bound to be interruptions in that supply, which is not something we've experienced for some time. I mean, we've all been living with Libya being out of action for quite a long time, but now all of a sudden we see some of these other countries finding it difficult to maintain their supply, and I think that's putting some pressure on the inventories are coming down as a result of all of that, and therefore, there's a price response.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm seeing at the moment, what's your market cap? Around about 0.3, is it, of a million?
Yeah, something like that. I don't think that reflects the number of new shares that have been issued. We've issued about another 200 million shares in the last little while, 250 million shares. So that market cap probably doesn't reflect that just yet. But so our total shares outstanding right now should be something like 700 million shares.
Oh, okay. All right. So a little bit bigger than that. But
it's still on the very small side compared to what I think the company's worth.
Yeah, having said that, with those accruing revenues hopefully coming in, maybe you'll get a re-rate. All right, Graham, listen, you know, if anyone needs any convincing, please give us three reasons why you think, you know, an investor should put IRG on their Vox Markets watch list.
Well, we have a producing asset that's viable in today's oil price, and Egypt is a very interesting place, a very exciting place, and there's lots of things that can be done in Egypt to make our asset more valuable. Tunisia, we have renewed interest in our permit, and people are looking at farming into that. And you have a very committed management team who want to see this company through this period of time, and you know, we look forward in the next few months to a significant re-rating.
Yeah, and so looking forward, what's the next sort of milestone we can expect news about?
I think the next one will be the announcement of receivables from Egypt and the registration process having been completed. I think that's the near-term news that we should expect.
Good to speak to you, Greg, and come back on when you have some more news.
Okay, thank you, Jess.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chief Executive Officer Tony Stiff and Chief Financial Officer, that's Nigel Canham of Flow Group, and that's ticker code FLOW. Guys, thank you for joining me.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for listening to us.
That's all right. Well, listen, we've got a bit of interest on social media. I sent out a little survey saying, any questions for the guys at Flow Group? And we've had quite a few submitted, so that's good. We'll get to that in a bit. First and foremost, for anyone who hasn't ever heard of you guys or just about know a little bit about you, what are you all about there at Flow Group?
We're a new kind of energy services business, really. If you compare us to someone like a British Gas, we're a very small version of British Gas, but we have some unique technology as well. So we have a home energy supply business where we supply gas and electricity very competitively. We think great customer service into residential customers in the UK. We have some very interesting technology that we've been developing for a number of years now called Micro CHP, which is essentially a gas boiler that's installed in your home. When it runs, it generates some electricity, and that electricity is low carbon, so it's a very in product at this moment in time because we have power generation issues in the UK, and we're trying to reduce our carbon footprint. So that's some technology that we've just introduced into the market. We also have some smart in-home technology, which we retail as well through that business. And recently we announced a deal that we've done with Daikin, which is, we think, a great deal where we bring one of their gas boilers into the UK as a new product. The advantage of us launching that product into our customers is where our micro CHP technology doesn't fit, we will have a heating product for that customer. So in summary, we have an energy business, we have a heating business, and we have a micro CHP business.
Okay, excellent. So let's break it down here. So at the moment, you said your boiler there, is that for sale as now, is it?
Yes, it is. The company goes back obviously quite a way. It launched on the market in 2006 with the aim of commercializing this technology, which was at a stage then it was drawing board, it was patents granted. It's taken some time because it's a very complex technology to move into the market. No one else has done this. The technology was launched, we launched it this year. We are now installing that. So the first installation took place about a month ago now. And we are installing that as a business as usual process.
Okay, so I see in a financial review there, you've got revenues of 40 million. Where essentially is that coming from at the moment? What's the majority of that coming from?
That all comes from the energy business. As Tony mentioned, we supply energy to domestic users in the UK. So our revenue in 2015, as you said, was 40 million. And that grew 21% from the 33 million the year before. But our number of customers has increased dramatically from the 100,000 customer accounts we had at the end of 2015. And we announced recently we're around about 190,000 customers. So we've grown rapidly since the end of December, and that the energy business is growing well for us, and the opportunity in the marketplace to take market share from the big six is very good for us.
Yeah. And so why are you sort of different from the big six?
Well, we started our energy business to complement our boiler business, because we wanted to bundle in technology with energy. So customers had a competitive energy price, but they also had technology which could reduce their energy costs in their home as well. So that's where we think we're different. We're able to operate on gross margins that are less than the big six. So, for example, our gross margins are around, 10 to 12%. And that goes throughout our business modeling, where a big six energy player would have gross margins probably around 19%. So they have a higher cost base, basically, than the surge.
I see. And going forward, the revenue mix, will that change? Do you expect more revenue to come from the boiler section or...?
Yeah, we expect, obviously the energy business is growing. It's been growing since 2013. So we're on a track now where we're pulling on, customers every single day are signing up to Flow. Announced that we had 180,000 customers. That is growing on a daily basis. And, we're north of that now. So with an expectation that we'll finish this year on, some analysts are predicting that we'll be, 250, 275 customers at the end of this year. That will provide, significant revenue into the business. But we've launched our micro CHP. We'll start to pull revenue in now because we're selling those units. We expect to do a couple of thousand this year and then grow throughout 2017. So the revenue is going to be smaller in comparison to the energy revenue. But it's a significant step for the evolution of the business, and over the next few years, that revenue will increase and will probably outstrip energy revenue.
Yeah. Okay. There's a couple of questions from private investors. Does Flow have a patent on its tech, making it unique?
Yes, it does. We have a patent. We have a patent in, I think, and I may be getting this slightly wrong, but about 19 countries.
Yeah.
That patent is very solid. Our partners, Jabil, who build the technology for us, went through a due diligence phase where they had patent attorneys check to make sure our patents were solid. Mm-hmm. So our technology could not be infringed, and to make sure that we had the freedom to operate, to make sure that we were not infringing anyone else's patents. So we're very comfortable that no one else can build an organic rankine cycle technology in micro CHP in all the territories that we aim to go to.
Yeah. And well, there's a question about that. It says, first of all, are you planning to expand into Europe, and how big is the domestic market and the European market?
Well, the UK market, we have just over 20 million boilers in the UK. Mm-hmm. And over time, we will introduce, as our product reduces in cost, as volumes increase, that market will widen for us. Once we introduce the combi version of the product, which we will start the design of this year, into that market, we will expand the market in the UK. In Europe, there are 115 million boilers.
Okay.
So the market's significantly bigger in total than the UK. So it's a very interesting market for us. And our technology, is, you know, CE approved. It's applicable in Europe. Obviously, there may be some slight variations with some of the connections, but the core technology is available to use in those territories.
Okay. And you mentioned there different parts of the business, and one of them mentioned was in-home technology in some way. What's that about? Can you describe that?
Yeah. Obviously, the Internet of Things, the connectivity in people's homes has really become alive over the last few years, with lots of investment in, you know, things like smart thermostats in people's homes so they can control their boilers, technology to control your lighting in your home, as well as your heating, as well as, you know, your solar panels and other devices that you may want to connect and understand how they're performing or control them. You know, this is obviously, we're at a very early adopter stage, I think, for in-home technology, but we'd expect to be bundling that technology in with boilers that we sell in the future, so customers are able to control the technology that we provide in their homes very efficiently, effectively, and they're always in control of it. But I do think it's you know, a slow process. It will probably take another 5-10 years before in-home technology is a, you know, a de facto thing that people use.
Yeah, yeah. And I think people sort of, you know, it came on people's radar, this sort of area of tech, when I think Google, wasn't it, bought, I think it was Nest for like three or four billion, I think, wasn't it, a couple of years back, yeah.
Yes, they bought Nest. I think it was 3.2 billion that they paid for Nest, which is a smart thermostat.
Yeah.
You know, that goes in your home and is connected to your router and controls your heating. Mm. You know, we have a version of Nest ourselves, which we sell via a company called Fifth Play, who are a Belgian business that were introduced to us by Jabil, our partners. We think their technology is very good. It's not our product, so it's a Me Too product that we launch, where we're unique, where we believe we're unique with our micro CHP and our ability to lower the cost of heating systems through our relationship with Daikin.
Okay.
Where we think we're unique, you know, the in-home technology is an add-on.
Okay, and so looking forward now, timeline-wise, what news can we expect? You know, in all aspects of the business there, and what's next? You know.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're growing our energy business day by day. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll probably be announcing in the future where we are with numbers in that business. With our relationship that we announced with Daikin, we have some interesting technology from Daikin, and we'll be looking at rolling some of those units out this year. So there'll be some noise around that. We announced also that we're rolling units out, or we have a relationship in Italy with a heating consortium in Italy. Units have gone to them for validation. Some more units will go out in about a month's time for a larger validation. Then we'd expect probably be announcing entering European market at some stage this year.
Excellent stuff. All right. Well, listen, if anyone needs any more convincing, guys, could you give us three reasons why an investor should put Flow Group on their Vox Markets watch list?
Okay. I think if you look, and I'll segment the business now, if you look at, you know, just the energy business on its own, the UK market has a number of challenger energy suppliers. They're challenging the big six. Companies like OVO, Energy, First Utility. Those are two companies that are bigger than Flow, and have recently had some value metrics against those businesses around £300 per customer, the value of that business. Now, Flow is, we believe, is on the same track as those companies on growth. So just as an energy business proposition, we believe there's a lot of value in the business. So customer or in potential investors and investors should look at the energy side of the business as well as the other components. The worldwide market for micro CHP is going to grow. You know, there have been several reports out now that across Europe and in the UK that we have issues on power generation, shortages of power coming up. We're closing coal-fired power stations. New nuclear power stations are going to take a long time to build. Renewables are good, but they don't work if the wind's not blowing or the sun's not shining. Mm-hmm. You need some, you know, you need to generate power. What the flow boiler does is generate power at peak in the winter period. So it's a very cost-effective, efficient way of producing low carbon electricity in the home. And that can only grow, we believe. It'll take time. And, you know, we're not going to roll millions of boilers out tomorrow, but we want to build that up over several years to become, you know, quite a de facto product. The third one is that we've also created what we call our Flow Brand Ambassador Network, where we have signed up now around 160 companies. Quality companies that have gone through accreditation in the business to sell our products, install our products, and survey a customer's home. Those guys are fitted with the latest technology, so they can sell energy in the home. They'll be able to sell our products and install those in the home. We think that because we can sell to the customer in the home, we think that we will be able to increase the sale of our heating products, especially the Daikin relationship. We can bring that product in. We don't have to sell that product to a merchant. Therefore, we are selling it straight to the customer. That way, we can cut margin out the merchant network and deliver that margin to the customer and to ourselves. So the customer gets a cheaper boiler. We get more margin in that process, and we can grow a significant heating business.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Marvellous. Listen, guys, thank you very much for coming on, and you know, you've got a lot of news coming out.
Yes.
So please, you know, do come back on the podcast when you release that news.
Okay, thanks. Great. Very much. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Justin.
That's it for the podcast. Thank you very much for listening. I'm not doing a stock with potential today because I think there's enough information in the podcast without clogging it up. So by all means, though, go to voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. Click on one of the links there of my podcast, and you'll see a little link to submit a penny stock with potential, which I'll read out on a future episode of the podcast. Could be tomorrow, could be the day after. And also, if you like the podcast, if you get any value whatsoever in the podcast, please click the link to iTunes, give me a 5-star rating and review. I will read that out in the podcast. I'll dedicate a podcast to you. I'm at, I think, 143 five-star ratings, and I'm in the top 10 of what's hot on investing in iTunes. That's globally, and I want to get top 5, and I think I need to get above 150. So I get above 150, I think they move me up into the top 5 band. So if you could do that, I would appreciate it. Thank you for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.